We lost our dad in April. My husband couldn't be in
my brother
with
died a month ago. We couldn't see him for 4 months.
Business have been decimated. Jobs lost. Trust has been shattered.
On the 19th of August 2020, Ireland was a country on the edge.
The number of cases that we have now have in Ireland is very substantially more than we were seeing even just a few weeks ago.
COVID-19 was into its second wave, with daily case numbers creeping back up and the government urging everyone to cut back on social contact.
This is about recognising that there are things we do in life which are inherently carry a risk, and we've got to manage that risk. And unfortunately, until we have a vaccine widely distributed for COVID-19, that is the case. That's what the measures are about. They're about saying, let's move now. Let's not wait till community transmission goes up and up. Let's move now to do what we know will work to reduce community transmission.
Just 24 hours earlier, new restrictions had been announced. Indoor gatherings were capped at 6 people, outdoor events at 15. Weddings were being downsized again, family celebrations cancelled, and GAA matches played in empty stadiums.
I've had to cancel, postpone, put off, whatever the word is, my own wedding. I know it's a first world problem in the middle of COVID-19, and there's lots and lots of couples out there doing exactly the same thing.
On the night of the 19th, in a hotel in Clifton, County Galway, 81 people gathered for a dinner to celebrate the Oireachtas Golf Society.
Cabinet ministers, members of the judiciary, former politicians, former journalists, we're immune. Isn't that great? We're all immune from this virus that's so, so dangerous to everybody else. It is insulting to people out there.
That event and the fallout that followed became known as Golfgate, one of the most politically explosive stories of the pandemic.
The story that everybody's talking about in Ireland this afternoon, hashtag Golfgate. In fact, most of the trends on Twitter in Ireland are in relation to this very same story that was first broke by the Irish Examiner, that there was an 80 plus person event in Clifton in Galway on Wednesday, and there was ministers, there was senators, and there was EU Trade Commissioner Phil Hogan in attendance, despite cases in Ireland soaring with regards to COVID-19.
And 5 years on, we're looking back at what happened, how it played out, and whether or not it left a lasting mark on Irish politics.
These breaches were either the result of collective crass stupidity or arrogant delusion, or both. The event and the circumstances which flowed from it has damaged public confidence in our public system. And confidence wasn't high at the best of times. And confidence in this law has been damaged.
It's News Talk Daily. I'm Sean Defoe. And I'm joined by the two people reunited who first broke the story for the Irish Examiner, Aoife Moore and Paul Hosford. Paul is the acting political editor of the Examiner, and Aoife presents the Gold Out podcast, A Few Scoops, alongside Colm O'Regan. Good to have you both in to News Talk Daily, and the dream team, like Avengers reassembled here. Paul, we might just start to bring us back, because we look back on COVID now through the lens of a lot of time having passed and things returned to normal. Like, bring us back to mid-August 2020. What was daily life like, the restrictions we were living under?
Yeah, it was, like you said, it was one of those times where cases had started to creep up. There was more restrictions. There were localised restrictions in Kildare, Offaly and Laois. So it was a very odd time, because the weather was really nice. It was actually a really nice summer. It was glorious. But we were all living under this cloud of restrictions. And we'd had a little bit of a taste of freedom almost in the June and July. Things had kind of started to ease up. And then as the cases started to creep up mid-August, I think everyone started to realise that by the time school, typical school return rolled around, we were going to be in some serious bother, and we probably weren't going to see a winter free of restrictions. So there was that cloud. So in the news media, it was constant with COVID. COVID was everything from March until probably the following year, June or July of the following year. Every day you were waking up and the first thing on your list was, what's the latest? What are we talking in terms of restrictions? What are we talking in terms of case numbers? There's the daily NPHET briefing. We all remember those in that room in the bottom floor of the Department of Health over in Mesium Plaza. So it was a very strange time, and it was one of those. It was at that point where you could start to feel public buy-in waning, because they'd given so much in March, April, May, got a bit of a glimpse of what freedom could look like in June and July. And once things started to kind of ramp up again, and once restrictions started to kind of become the norm again, it was a country that was very much teetering on the edge.
Yeah. What do you remember that summer? Because we were all covering it. We were all political correspondents at the time. And I just remember being repeatedly in that dungeon in the bottom of the government buildings where the leaders would do their speeches. And everyone remembers the speeches on the steps. Then there was the press conference afterwards. And we all, looking back at it weirdly, we all almost self-selected our own seating. You became used to the same seat every week.
Because it was before masks. I don't even think we were wearing masks at that stage. And my big thing I remember is I was living in a ground floor flat, a 2-bedroom flat with 4 adults. So it was very cramped, and everyone else that I lived with was working from home. And I was, myself and Paul and Danny, we would all choose, one night after another, we would go to the NPHET briefing with Tony Houlihan, and he would tell us how many people had died that day. And when you think about it, it was like an incredibly grim, kind of like real last days on earth type experience.
So, evening all, thank you again for being with us this evening. We're reporting to you that we've been notified of an additional 4 deaths in the last 24 hours, bringing the total now to 1,714, 713 of which occurred in an acute hospital environment. That's 42%, 86 in an intensive care. That's 5%. And we have reports of underlying conditions in 1,579, that's 92%. The male-female breakdown is 848 males, 866 females, and the median age is 84.
And I would come home to my flat, and the people I lived with were so excited that someone had been further than like 2 kilometres. They'd be like, where did you go? What shop did you go to? What did you have for your lunch? Who did you see? Because they were stuck in the house all the time. You know, you're going to the same supermarket and coming home again. That was basically all anyone did. Apart from the fact that we all got really into, running. We all just started jogging around the estate because we had nothing to do. But I remember being in those NPHET briefings with Tony Houlihan and thinking about, because you can't help, but as a journalist, you also think about yourself and your own personal family circumstance. So my granddad was in his 80s, still is in his 80s, he's still with us. And how is this going to affect my granddad? My dad's a barman. When's the pub going to open? When's my dad going to be able to back to work? My mom works in a supermarket. She was an essential worker, God save us. So I was thinking about, your own personal circumstance, as well as thinking about people in nursing homes. And we were starting to hear those horror stories about nursing homes and funerals. And you're thinking about your own circumstances. Obviously, people get married, weddings being cancelled all around you, friends, christenings for their children being cancelled. Journalists were lucky in a way because we were distracted from it. But for the greater public, it was a horrendous time. We were just talking to your producer about this. It was definitely a trauma that we all lived through.
Yeah, we were definitely lucky to have that pass that got you past the Garda checkpoints that you met twice on every drive on the way into town.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you felt very, very lucky that you could just go to a different supermarket. As Paul said, there was this feeling at the end of that summer that people were starting to lose the rag a wee bit. We would just come out of the election and it was a very new government. There was this feeling that the government didn't really understand the toll that lockdowns were having on people and businesses and children especially. And we were just teetering, as Paul said, teetering on that edge where patience was just starting to wear. And if anything could have happened to push them over the edge, but it just so happened that the one thing couldn't have been worse.
Yeah. So, Paul, with that in mind, so people are kind of teetering. Like you said, there was a little bit of freedom through the summer, and now we were realising, something's going on here case-wise. Remind us of those restrictions that were announced in the days before Golfgate.
Yeah, so what you had seen was that things like weddings, family gatherings have been cut from 25 down to 6 in some cases.
Now, I know that there's been a lot of talk and commentary about the measures that were recommended, and many people are confused about what they should be doing. But at the heart of what we want to do is a very simple message. Please limit the number of people that you're meeting up with over the next 3 weeks. Specifically, please focus on 2 key numbers, 6 and 15. Please do not have more than 6 people over to your house or garden. And outside, no more than 15 people should meet up. And even then, people need to physically distance from one another. please work from home if at all possible. You can still play sport, you can still go to a restaurant and meet your friends and family, but we are asking that you do this in as safe a way as possible.
And all we were getting, like Aoife says, like all you were getting when you were at the NEFA briefings was like Twitter DMs or Twitter messages. Can you ask about weddings? My wedding's booked next week. And you had to go back to these people and say, look, Tony Hoolan says your 25 person wedding now has to be six. You know, I know people who got married and had the six. I know people who got married and had 25 or had 50. I don't think they'd have changed their days when they look back on them, but like having to make that decision in real time. And people always said that, you know, six is easy because you can kind of just pick your parents and one or two others, and then 25 gets more difficult. So people are having to make those calls in real time.
Yeah, I'm sure relationships never recovered in some cases.
I remember poor Paul Quinn from Virgin Media.
That's right.
Who had his wedding planned, and I think initially was meant to have 200 people there, and in the lead up had the restrictions changed five or six times in terms of who many he could have. Like it was, but I had actually forgotten about the DMs and the amount of people who messaged every, like it, you couldn't ever possibly ask the amount of questions you were being given.
Yeah, every day you opened your DMs and it was like, just sometimes it was the most obscure sort of like, I have a tattoo booked and I want to get a full sleeve. I'd be like, maybe just sit for an hour and come back the next day. I like, you're giving out medical advice. I remember this so clearly. I'm not going to name and shame, but there was a very prominent politician who phoned me one day to say that he had COVID and he wanted to go out to his front garden and cut the grass. And he phoned me to ask if he was allowed. And I was like, surely there's someone better place that you could phone.
This was Aoife's brief stint on NEFIT.
Yeah. Well, it felt like we were all members of NEFIT for a brief time. Yeah, we were certainly answering more questions than NEFIT were.
Yeah, and it was a good reminder of the public-facing part of this job, that you do work in service of the reader and of the audience, that, you know, you were in a press conference and you were being given questions. And some of them, like you said, were remarkably specific. Like, you know, I want to go and adopt six dogs on a Saturday in leash. Can I do that? Like, how does this affect me? I'm an artisanal beekeeper. You know, it was really, really full on.
Do bees carry COVID?
Yeah, there was that whole thing. And we can laugh about it now and it's good, but it was so all consuming.
Mm.
Like my eldest child was, 5 months at the time. I was really lucky because I could go and see people. My wife was, you know, she was postpartum at home with a baby, couldn't go any further than 2 kilometres. And at the time, nothing was really built around our estate. We were only in the house a couple of years, new build. And the 2 kilometres was pretty depressing. You could you could walk to the ring road and back. Once you hit a certain traffic light, you had to come back. There was no like parks or anything. So it was, and those things, those restrictions really highlighted the fault lines of like people close to, say, the 40 foot or like Sandy Cove.
Yeah.
Their 2 kilometres was great because they could just go for a swim and there was nobody else around them. If you were close to the Phoenix Park, you could just nip into the park if you had a park on your doorstep. But as that kind of opened up and then contracted again, people were starting to get very, very, very ratty.
A very good friend of ours, he was our next door neighbour, who we loved. We couldn't visit him in his final days. We couldn't hold his hand. He died of cancer, not COVID. We couldn't be there with him. We would have been there with him. We've had all of that. My daughter-in-law watched her granddad that she loved from a chair in her sitting room as he was cremated on a monitor on a television screen. My son said, Mom, if he just saw their faces. You know, we've all had that horrible, horrible heartache and pain.
Yeah. Mm. So Aoife, bring us then to the anatomy of the scoop, I suppose. When did you first get wind that something had happened in Clifton?
This is the thing I remember so clearly. So I was at a very small press conference with Josepha Madigan, who was the Minister for Disabilities at the time. One of those real COVID-specific pressers, but it was about getting air filters into special schools or something like that. So I went to this Merkin, obviously, just to get out of the house, I think. I was like, I will go over to this. And it was in Dundrum. But anyway, I went to the press conference. Nothing exciting happened. And then I went in to a Starbucks in Dundrum. And I had finished writing up the Josepha copy. And then the email came into me and Paul. And this email was from this person who said, this is not my video. He said, I was sent this by a friend of mine. You should check this out. It was in the Station House Hotel in Coughton. And what the video was a very blurry, badly taken video of the seating plan for the Oireachtas Golf Society. So like when you go to a wedding,
yeah,
you know, that type of thing. And the first table I remember so clearly had Dara Cleary, who was the very new Minister for Agriculture. He was at the table, I think, with Phil, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And a number of other names that I recognised. I think me and Paul rang each other and we were like, this is mad. So the first thing, I was like, let me just phone the hotel,
Mm. So, and when was, just to put it in the, because the story broke on Friday morning, wasn't it?
No, so
when
was it was a Thursday night.
It was Thursday night.
So okay. This was at about 11 o'clock in the morning on the Thursday.
Yeah, because we, so something we jumped on at about kind of 12.
So I phoned the hotel, real breezy, real casual. I was like, hiya, how's it going? Just checking. Did the Oireachtas Golf Society event go ahead last night? And this poor girl, who was probably only about, she only sounded about 20 or 21. And she was like, yeah, I wasn't working, but there was about 81 people there, but it went ahead, no issue. And I went, that's great. Thank you very much. Hung up a phone, phoned Paul back and was like, we're on. And we basically took it by table. I always remember we didn't have a lot of the phone numbers because some of them were very obscure, former politicians or whatever. Mm. We also had to agree not because to text into the political journalist group chat to tip you guys off.
Yes.
Because if we were like, can we have X person's number? They'd be like, why are they looking for that number? So we were going around the houses looking for phone numbers and we started basically going through the table plan and phoning each person. The reason I remember the cafe so clearly is because of the COVID restrictions, I was only allowed to be in the cafe for an hour. And the staff kept being like, you have to go, you have to go. But I was living in Coolock and I was in Dundrum. And I was like, I can't sit in this car for 45 minutes and not be working on this story. So I broke probably COVID regulations myself, trying to stay in the Starbucks and eventually got chucked out. And then I sat in the car for a while. But we just went through every number,
yeah,
phoned every person.
Yeah, and Sean, you know yourself when you're working on a story, like there's so many stories where you work so hard for days and days and days.
Mm.
And then something like this, it comes from like a tip off. And we did really good work. Like we worked hard. We got every number that we could. And Danny McConnell, who was our our political editor at the time, he was off. He was on a beach in Sligo. So we didn't, we never really flagged to him that it was.
No, we didn't tell him till the end.
That it was coming. Like, till we'd sent the copy over, we were just hammering people. And, you know, it was a case of like every time we got somebody to speak, we'd ring the other back and be like, okay, does that tally with what you said? And I remember somebody who was at the event said to me, no, it was partitioned off. The argument was whether you could have 50 or whether you could have none.
Yeah, this was the idea of the there was a big massive room, but because it was in two, it was technically two separate events. Yeah.
And oh, who would have thought partition would cause so much trouble?
There you go. But when
he was from the north.
You may have guessed that, who have followed her career. When you were ringing these people, I mean, did they immediately know they had done something wrong? Were there people who were like, oh yeah, like the receptionist that you rang?
So I phoned Dara Cleary and he was the first person I phoned. I phoned him and said, Dara, did you go to the Oireachtas Golf Society event in Clifton last night? And he immediately said, yeah. And he said, do you know, when I was sitting there, I thought to myself, this isn't right. You know, I didn't investigate it enough. And he was like, will you give me an hour to get a statement together? And I said, yeah. I says, but I'm just letting you know, myself and Paul are running the story, whether you put the statement out or not, you've confirmed you were there. I'll give you an hour because we've got other people to phone. He wouldn't give me any more information about the event. He didn't want to talk about the rooms or the partition or anything like that. He just wanted an hour to get a statement together. So that was the first person I think we phoned.
I rang Aoife and I said, look, there's an argument here that they could have had 50, is their argument. They could have had 50. And if it was split down the middle, was it 240s? Are they under the 50? And Aoife said, somebody said to me that there was a partition, but there was a hole in the partition.
The partition was open.
And I think word had kind of started to filter around at kind of 3 or 4 o'clock was when you kind of stopped getting answers to your phone calls.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I remember there was a lot of, it was all, mostly men saying, no, this is fine, this is in the rules, this is fine. And because we were hearing it so often, me and Paul were ringing each other going, is this fine? Were they allowed to do this?
So what and point it, did you, like, where did you go to get the medical advice? Because there was very, there are other journalists who claim they were on the verge of breaking this story. And there was a question, I think, asked at the NPHET briefing that evening by another outlet who was also following this on.
It was the ever-present Gav Riley. It had also been announced on Radio Na Gaeltachta as well, and nobody picked it up.
The previous morning, there was this piece on Radio Na Gaeltachta that was like, the Oireachtas Golf Society's in town, they're playing golf and they're going for a meal.
Going for their dinner, and no one picked up on it. but yeah, so Gav had asked the question at NPHET, but the question was so...
Gav had got Zara King.
He got Zara to ask it.
And that's what tipped me off, because Zara asked it in a very... guarded way. You know, when your listeners might not be familiar with this, but sometimes you're onto something and you have to ask it in a public way, but you have to not tip the people in the room off that you're asking the question because you're onto something. So you ask it in this really circuitous way where I think Sarah's kind of thing is like, what would your advice be for people who wanted to hold a gathering of 81 people who happened to be golf buddies?
Well, it was a bit like not messaging the WhatsApp group that exists at the political correspondence, because I think that was the moment a lot of other outlets who hadn't heard were like, something is out there. Yeah. Something is about to happen.
Yeah, and I would say I didn't see the NPHET briefing because we were still working on the story at that point. But I got a phone call from someone's advisor, very, very nice person, said, I am just letting you know that another journalist has now phoned me about this. So if you are going to publish it, you need to publish it now. We were trying to hold it for the front page of the paper the next day. We were, as you said, back to your question there about the guidance, we were going between NPHET, Fáilte Ireland was a big one as well, the Fáilte Ireland advice.
Was it the Hotels Federation had their own
Hotels
advice
Federation
as well?
But we have a statement from the Irish Hotels Federation, and they said that they permit a maximum of 50 people at one time, including hotel staff. Multiple gatherings are allowed in a venue, provided that they are in separate defined spaces.
I was on the phone to the manager of the hotel, and me and him went back and forth for, I think the longest phone call I had that day was the manager of the Station House Hotel. And we both thought we were right, but we both had completely different views of what the rules were.
So they thought, we've done nothing wrong here. We were perfectly within the guidance. We separated the rooms. It was fine.
Yeah, basically. They were very keen that they had followed all the advice to the letter. And then sure, wasn't the minister there, and the AG was the Attorney General was there. So it must be right. And I was trying to say to them, I don't care who was there, Mucker. This is wrong. Because then we got the tip off that Gav and Zara were on it. The story went out at 7 o'clock.
Well, I think you sent me copy and I wrapped it together and I sent it to John O'Mahony, who's now the group editor in The Examiner, and I sent it to him at 5:37 with the subject line, golf yarn. And then me and you sat for like an hour and a half.
It's right.
We were texting each other back and forth. We were like please,
where is it? Where is it?
It has to go up. And then we were kind of letting the desk know, like, somebody else is chasing this. And then we knew that Virgin had a bulletin at 7.
Yeah, that's right.
So we were like, it has to be gone by 7 because if not, Gav might have firmed it up. And at 7:01, it was...
Because I remember we were waiting so long, I decided to go to the gym. I was like, because gyms were open. So I decided to go to the gym and I was like, I just need to clear my head. And I remember walking into the gym and my ma phoned me. My mommy's not mad into politics or news or whatever, but she's a great gauge of like if a story is relevant or not because she's not into it. And I said to her, mommy, I think I did something. I was like, me and Paul, I've got a really big story. She was like, what is it? And I said, told her, I was like, 81 of them had a hooly last night. And she was like, oh, Jesus. My ma was really shocked. And then by my ma's reaction, I knew we had done something big. I went down to the gym. I stood on the treadmill and turned the treadmill on. You sent me the story and I tweeted it because at the time I had more followers. You tweeted because you have more followers. I went out at 7:01 on Twitter. And by 7:15, I had to leave the gym because my phone was just hopping. And I was like, I'm not getting anything done. I'm just going home.
Yeah, I was lying on the bed with my wife and our son. We were trying to settle him before bed. When Aoife tweeted and we tweeted, I was like watching the retweets and watching the responses. And I was like, oh no, I think like, because you don't know. Like, you think this is a big thing, but you don't know it's going to land. And you've probably had stories where you're like, this is going to do numbers. Yeah. People are going to really care. This is going to set the agenda.
Crickets.
And it's just and we've all done it. You're like, this is so important, and it just doesn't happen. In those days, it could have been overtaken by anything. And once I saw that started to rack up, I was like, oh.
The Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine, Dara Kaleri, has apologised for attending an event with around 80 other guests in a hotel in County Galway, which may have breached public health guidelines. The event, an Oireachtas Gulf Society dinner, took place in Clifton on Wednesday night. It's understood 45 people were seated in one room, separated by a partition from 36 people in another room. In a statement, the minister said that he should not have attended the event in light of the updated public health guidance this week.
It was just, it just exploded everywhere. The first person actually who phoned me to say well done, I don't actually mind me saying this, was Catherine Murphy from the Social Democrats. But I didn't sleep at all that night. Like, my phone just didn't stop.
All right, Aoife and Paul, let's pause it there for now. We're going to be back here tomorrow, which is the actual fifth anniversary of that dinner in the Station House Hotel, to take a deep dive into the reaction to your story and the political fallout that took place over the following days. Part two of our News Talk Daily special, Gulfgate 5 years on, will be in your feeds first thing in the morning. Be sure to give the podcast a like and a follow to make sure you don't miss it. But for now, from Aoife, Paul and me, Sean Defoe, enjoy the rest of your day.